Strange things are afoot at the Circle K.
That kid is back on the escalator again.
Pain don't hurt.
Is my boomstick.
Game over, man. Game over.
Welcome to the Bargain Bin. Here's your host, Ben Mason.
And he's your co-host, Sandra Luketic. And today we're talking 1998's Phantoms. I don't think anybody really cares about spoilers here, man. This movie is notorious for being terrible for multiple reasons. And I have to ask now, because of that reason alone, why is this your pick?
Because in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, they always said Affleck was the bomb in Phantoms.
As in he bombed the movie.
I mean, that's not the context of which they say
I know.
The statement, if you're familiar with the Jay and Silent Bob movie, but it's the main reason that the movie stayed on my radar, because I was like, oh, you know, maybe it's an ironic joke, although they're making it with Ben Affleck in the movie, though
he seems
to have the sense of humor. Would he be fine making fun of it if that was the case?
You the bomb in Phantoms, yo.
He was. So when Zero picked last week's movie, The Faculty, and I looked at my list where I just have movies that I want to cover and the years they came out, I'm like, oh, it's another 98 movie. I'm going to skip having Ben pick a random year. He's going to take another 1998 horror movie of sorts to keep that. Well, because it's October, right? We're doing the Halloween thing.
Spooky
season. You
know,
why not stick to like 1998? Horror type movie, and that's like, I have no other connection to it. I never read the book. I didn't even know it was based on a book until you told me.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no like deep rooted meaning or connection. I just literally picked it because of the year and the reference.
Yeah, just want to knock off the list.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But yeah, it is a book. It was a book, I believe, written or published in 83. Written by Dean Koontz. And I've talked about Dean Koontz before. I've talked about Watchers, how it's one of my favorite novels, how they bastardized the movie by knocking the main character Travis's age down from like 36 to a teenager, where he's played by Corey Haim. But I love the book. I love the movie. And there's another movie based off of Dean Koontz's work, which I hold in the highest regards, and that is Odd Thomas with Anton Yelchin. One of my favorite films, unfortunately, with the untimely passing of Yelchin, we never got to see a sequel. But if anybody's listening and has not watched Odd Thomas, go out and do it now. You will thank me later.
Okay, I got to stop the recording. I have a movie I need to go watch.
It's great, man. I think you would actually really enjoy it. I think you really would. We'll watch that sometime soon.
Oh, you said if you haven't seen it, stop what you're doing.
Maybe not for the show, but we will definitely watch it. The book Phantoms I have read, and honestly, couldn't tell you a fucking thing about it. It's very much like the movie, unfortunately. I think Dean Koontz is an amazing writer, but there's something about this story that is so utterly forgettable that I don't know why they would turn it into a film other than it's fucking Dimension, Miramax. They had a hit with Scream. We got Liev Schreiber and Rose McGowan, who are super hot. You got Ben Affleck. Obviously, that's going to draw people into the theaters. But why? Like, why this property? They had tried to turn to a movie a few times before. It never got off the ground. They didn't really seem to care, because if you look at the poster for the film, it's different actors' bodies with actors from the film's heads photoshopped on top of them. They reused photos from previous posters that the company had done. So like, Liev Schreiber is taken directly from the Scream 2 poster. Like, it seemed like they didn't care. They just really tried to draw people in. And releasing this movie in late January of 98 is a death sentence for film. I mean, I think Titanic was still in theaters at the time. So you're going to lose immediately.
were they perhaps contractually obligated to release X number of movies? And they were like, we just got to get this one out there to honor our deal.
It must be the case. I don't think they've even publicly released the budget. I couldn't find the budget for the movie.
Oh, wow.
They have released box office, which we'll get to. And bomb is an accurate term. But getting, like, before we do your game, I want to say, getting into, like, notes and everything, you actually provided the notes for this episode, and I thank you very much, because I have a lot going on right now. I have a trip. I'm leaving to see you tomorrow. Gonna have some fun times there. A decent recording as well for our next episode. So thank you for doing the notes here, but I have to say, Sandro, your opinion is very blatant. I tried to change a few things, but I can't change everything to hide your view of this movie.
Hey, I just write what I see. And for anybody who's been with us from the start, you'll know that this is only the second time I've ever done notes. The first one being a phenomenal episode we did with pro wrestler Joe Coleman covering No Holds Barred. And maybe my opinion is very clear, but so is my sense of humor.
Yeah, I may have edited a few things, but I left most of it in there. So yeah, if it sounds a bit different, this episode is covered in Sandro Flair.
Don't censor me. Before we get to my game, I just want to play the shill that we don't often do and let people know we're getting buried in the algorithm. So if you listen to our show, if you enjoy it, whether it's on YouTube or a podcast catcher, leave a like, comment, subscription, review, anything you can do to just help us not get buried in the tidal wave of other podcasts so that maybe somebody else can hear us. Thank you. All right, Ben.
Yeah.
You're not going to have fun with this one, my friend. As opposed to the fun you have every other week.
Yeah, I mean, this is my favorite part of every recording.
Now, I do have to point out, you do have a curve here because, as you mentioned, Scream.
Yes.
We did an episode on Scream that never got released. So technically, you can't use those ones.
That's fine.
All right.
I'm good. I got this.
Okay.
Ben Affleck.
Correct.
Glory Days.
Fantastic movie. Very early episode. And one that you actually joined the Film Alchemist podcast to talk about once again. So seek that out as well.
Yeah. Griffey is a king among men.
Yeah. I'm shilling it today.
I'm done.
That's it?
We haven't covered anything with Peter O'Toole.
No.
Have we covered Rose McGowan?
I mean, we did cover her in Scream.
Other than Scream.
Yeah, she had a small cameo in another movie that we covered.
Oh, fuck. Oh, God, I remember mentioning that, too. Shit. Encino Man.
You got it!
Fuck yes.
And I wouldn't have gotten this last one in a million years, which seems to be my go-to phrase when I tell you I don't think.
So it's not Joanna Going?
Mm-mm.
It's not Liev Schreiber?
Mm-mm.
Is it Nikki Catt?
Mm-hmm. Deputy Steve.
Deputy Steve and his weird fucking purple eyes. I don't like that. Nikki Catt was in a movie called Suburbia in, I think, 1998 as well, playing the character of Tim, who is basically the film version of my good friend Michelle. And he is so good in that movie. Another one I highly recommend. Not really fodder for the bargain bin, but a very interesting film. Nikki Catt, though, he plays so many different characters, and the majority of them kind of side characters. I don't know what we would have talked about him in. What was it?
What movie did you just reference?
Suburbia?
Think of a similar title to a movie.
Suburban Commando?
No.
Okay, what was it?
The Burbs.
Nikki Catt was in The Burbs!
Yeah, he played a character named Steve Koontz.
Steve Koontz, Dean Koontz. I see where we're going.
Yeah, lots of connections there. That is the end of the game. And honestly, you did better than I thought you were going to. So
yeah, me too, man.
That's disappointing for me. Honestly, anyway,
I had a beer ready from disappointment.
Well, now you're just going to have a beer out of celebration?
Let's go.
All right. You might need that for my notes.
Oh, I know. No, they're good. But let's get into this.
All right.
So the movie starts with the slow, ominous music. It's a weird track that keeps coming up throughout the movie, but followed by images of a car driving in a secluded, wintry atmosphere, the whole isolated town thing. It makes a lot of sense for the setting for the rest of the film. And honestly, dude, I love it. I love this kind of setting.
I know I just said last week with The Faculty that I love a movie that gets you right into the action immediately and draws your attention.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I'm not going to go in all of the tangents, but this is one of those exceptions where the opening being so slow and atmospheric makes sense because it's perfectly setting the mood for what you're going to get. That seclusion, that feeling of like almost uncomfortable awkwardness really gets you into the headspace that they want for this movie.
Agreed. And much like last week with The Faculty, I find this week we're covering another film that pays homage to too many movies that did it better. Because I see this and I'm enjoying it, but the whole time I'm thinking, this is The Shining. We're seeing the car, the windy road. We know we're going somewhere secluded. It's wintry. It's the opening of the fucking Shining. Like, I get it. It's iconic. But this is done worse than previous attempts. That being said, I still love the idea of being stuck in an isolated town, so I'm along for the ride already. Pun intended.
Yeah, you'll see in my notes that my brain went to references of video games more than movies, but
I agree. It's okay, let's just go there right now. For me, this movie covers The Shining. It covers The Thing again, like last week. And while I was watching it, before I read your notes, we both referenced two video games that this movie shamelessly stole from, being the Resi series and Silent Hill. 100% undeniably stole from Resident Evil and Silent Hill. Yeah?
I'm going to say yes. Obviously, I don't know because what do I know what the actual creators were making? But the feeling is absolutely there. And I mean, it can only be Resident Evil. I mean, Silent Hill wasn't out yet.
Silent Hill wasn't out in 98?
No, the original Silent Hill for PlayStation 1, I believe, came out in 99. So it would have come out after this.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, Resident Evil was the one that did it first in 96. And then Silent Hill was almost like an attempt to capitalize on this, like, new trend of survival horror video games that Resident Evil had kind of pioneered. So Silent Hill in and of itself is essentially like a ripoff of Resident Evil.
I knew that, but that gives a little bit more weight to this movie for me. That's interesting. Okay. I was quick to judge.
Mm-hmm.
So we meet our two protagonists, Lisa, played by Rose McGowan, and Jenny, played by Joanna Goeing, which I always love to read as Goeing. But Lisa, the younger of the two sisters, uses the car phone to call her boyfriend, I guess.
That's what it sounds like, or just some male. Yeah, I don't know.
You have listed here that she seems to be the bad girl type, but like attitude, smoking cigarettes, not happy about going to a small town. She's an LA girl. We get that. I really enjoy that kind of character being thrust into small town environments. You get that a lot in like teen TV shows and shit like that. But
they don't use it.
I know.
That's the problem.
There's a lot of setups here that are just dropped.
Because at one point she talks about how like it must be LA that taught her how to load a shotgun. But with the setup they had, I really anticipated her using some sort of street smarts to actually provide a benefit to the group that the rest wouldn't have had, because there's a lot of logical thinkers here, and it just never happened. It's like, okay, so why are you, like, are you just setting up that she's a problem child that was sent to stay with her sister for a while?
I guess. I don't really know. And like, I don't remember that from the book at all. But like I said, the book, once you read it, it's out of your memory. What do you think about Jenny speeding up to get into the tunnel so this old car phone just loses reception?
Kind of a jerk move.
Right? And she's supposed to be our lead protagonist, I believe.
Well, it makes me feel like there's going to be some sort of tension between the sisters, that they don't get along, they don't work together. Maybe that's a bit of a character arc that they're going to build later, that, you know, working through tragedy together brings them closer. But there doesn't seem to be a wedge in their relationship. Just a little bit of sibling rivalry, maybe? I don't know.
I don't even know if it's rivalry. It's just
them
picking at each other like siblings do.
Yeah.
But the weird issue I have with this casting is that Lisa is more sympathetic than Jenny, and Lisa's the bad girl, but her reactions to what's happening are the most realistic. So I side more with what Lisa's doing than what Jenny's doing.
I did not care for Jenny as a character, or right? At least not one that I'm supposed to get behind and root for.
Yeah, I found myself rooting for the people we see on screen less. Like, I was rooting for Lisa, who is on screen a fair amount, but doesn't really have many lines. And Deputy Steve, because Nikki Katz's amazing. Peter O'Toole, I don't know how they even fucking got him for this movie. Like, that has to have been where the budget went. I'm sure they spent so much money, they just didn't even want to tell anybody.
They had some incriminating details on him.
Oh, that dude. I mean, the guy was in Caligula, man. Like, he's got some secrets. Or had some secrets, R.I.P. So yeah, they get through the tunnel. There's a discussion about the population of the town being 400 in the winter, but like 4,000 in tourist season. But we see no one in the streets. So they've set up that isolation really well. First they tell us, then they show us. It's locked in. You've written here, there's no sign of Hilda, who's the housekeeper that promised apple pie, even though the items are still on the stove and going, being prepped. And then they walk a few feet further into the room and they just see her body on the floor.
So how did they not see this immediately?
They don't walk around anything. They just move forward.
Like, Jenny is in the room first because the camera follows Lisa as she comes in, and Jenny's already in there looking through her mail. And Lisa takes like two steps forward and is like, oh no.
Yeah.
How did nobody notice that immediately?
And Jenny just assumes that she died suddenly because there's no blood or sign of a struggle. Have you ever heard of strokes? They take time. The woman is old. I would assume old age caught up with her. But no. And I love what you did here with your notes. Movie trope the first. The phone lines are dead. Yes. Movie trope the second. Noise from upstairs causes the girls to flee the house. Honestly, a very smart move. Get up, don't go upstairs. However, we get movie trope the third. Car that they were just driving is somehow dead. I'm okay with all of this.
Honestly, I am too. I wrote that in a way to try and be comedic, but good. Like, you didn't split up, you didn't go upstairs, you followed the tropes, but at least we know what we're getting into.
And after slapping us in the face with three tropes, they have the girls make the smart decision. And that is go to the police station. And I haven't seen this movie in a long time, but right now I'm like, this makes perfect sense. This is good writing. Of course, Dean Koontz wrote the screenplay as well.
I don't know why you would assume there's anyone at the police station, as you've seen literally no one. But at least if you gotta go somewhere, go to the safe place.
Yeah.
Or what you perceive to be the safe place.
But there's really good filmmaking here because, yes, while we have no reason to believe anyone's at the police station, they still make the brilliant choice to go to the safest place in town. And then we get some really cool camera angles because as they're walking through the streets, we get shots from inside houses looking out the windows as they pass by. And you'll hear phones ringing within these empty houses, and it creates a weird feeling of paranoia in me right away. So the setting is great. The suspense is already good. And all we've seen is a dead body, which we don't have any reason to believe is from any malicious intent. It could have just been an older person who died. The fact is, people are missing. The girls feel a little, not nervous, but
they feel nervous.
I don't definitely know if feel nervous. They just found it. Okay, we'll go with nervous.
There's no way they could mess up this setup.
It starts off really good, right? Really, yeah. Really good.
I'm in right now.
Yeah, me too.
At this point in time in the movie, I'm like, give me more. Let's do this.
So the police at the station are also dead. Same appearance as Hilda, you know, purple veins, clouded over pupils. Lisa, who you can't say you can't identify with right now because she is the most sympathetic, freaks out. And her sister just says, you're being scared, basically.
Yeah. It's
Yeah, I would be too. Everybody is dead. Yes, I am feeling a little scared right now.
It is the least reassuring pep talk I've ever seen in film, because Lisa is freaking out. And Jenny, like, does the whole thing where she, like, grabs her by the shoulders, like, she's gonna steady her, and she's like, you're just being scared. Doesn't wait for a reaction, and then just turns around and walks away.
She does this numerous times in the film. Like,
that is the least comforting pep talk I've ever heard.
Yeah, basically, it's like Jenny's saying, you're a problem child, and Lisa can just be like, well, you're an asshole.
Yeah. And Lisa's a doctor, too. Should she not be thrown off by the deep purple veins and clouded over eyes that she's seen in the victims?
No. To know that? Of course not. Why would a health professional look at health issues and rationalize it?
Unless she's in denial for herself, but they make her out to be a very intelligent person in the movie, so
do they?
I feel like she would see this and think this is not natural.
They state that she's very intelligent, but her actions deny that outright. You might think of purple veins. Yeah, everyone's got purple veins. Varicose. Like, those aren't varicose veins. Why? Okay, so they test the phone in the police station. That phone's dead. Why was the phone in the store ringing then?
I guess the demon that contacts them through the phone dialed the wrong number?
Right? It doesn't make sense with the rest of the story as we progress, but at the time, very atmospheric, and I really enjoyed it. But when you go back for a rewatch, it just doesn't make sense.
My only guess is that the phone was ringing in the store as they walked by, because it's almost like it's sensing a living presence, and it's kind of following it without pinpointing it. But that's the best I can do.
And as far as the dead people go, is it a disease? Because Lisa doesn't think so. Because one of the cops fired off 3 rounds from his gun, which means, you know, being a police officer probably should have hit something and there's no blood anywhere.
No.
The next move is probably the smartest. Arm yourself. Jenny says she knows the basics on how to load a shotgun.
Jenny is trying to load it and is just fumbling with it.
Yeah.
And Lisa's like, no, here's how you do it. Like, okay.
Yeah, which is fine, except load more than 3 shells.
But why do you even need to see this as a scene? It's like, okay, we need to arm ourselves. The next cut, you have them doing something. Just have them holding guns. I don't care.
Yeah. And it's really weird to have Lisa built up as this, like, street smart badass when every time you see her after this in the film, for the most part, she is portrayed as kind of meek, weak, and scared.
Yeah.
So allowing her to be scared just a second ago and now be like loading a pump action shotgun, like, where are we going with this? Why are we doing this? Maybe just abandon it immediately.
You're going nowhere with it because this is the one shot of her confidence.
Yeah. And then we go back, like, they're so smart with this, going back to the exterior shots, showing how isolated they are and how empty the town is. It is actually building tension in me. I don't know if you're still along for the ride right now, but even after that little blunder of, like, the arming themselves scene, this brings me right back.
Well, I don't think the arming themselves scene is a bad thing, because at this point in the movie, it could still be setting up the personality that Lisa has as the badass.
You're right. I'm looking at this with two viewings under my belt.
Yes. So, like, at this point in the movie, if you're fresh to it, they have not dropped the ball yet. It's just that they don't actually follow through with this setup to deem it worthwhile.
Mm-hmm. So they try another car. Again, smart character move. Try and find a way to either travel around the town faster or get out. But then go to Jacob and Anna's bakery. And on the way to the bakery, we get a shot that I think you and I will both agree is one of the better shots of the entire film. And that is, as the girls go through a metal gate, I immediately think Resident Evil.
Well, it's the exact sound you would expect. The camera angle goes to behind them, you know, like a third-person view you would have in one of those games.
Yep. The sound design, amazing. The camera angle, perfect. The lighting, fantastic, because it is very much overcast in this weird mountain Colorado town. I wanted this to be the rest of the film. It needs to be more prevalent in the movie. Because
I know it came before it, but at this point in the movie, I'm like, oh, this is a better Silent Hill movie than the Silent Hill movie.
Yeah, I am right there with you. The scares get cheaper after this, it seems, though.
Oh, yeah.
Because, yeah, you have written here that they get scared into the bakery. With there's creaky floorboards inside and what sounds like fluttering above them. There's a lot of off-screen distractions in jump scare sounds, bangs, not screams necessarily, but it's cheap. It's really cheap scares for the most part from here on. Like finding the pair of severed hands still holding onto a rolling pin. Like, it's
unsanitary.
Yes, it is.
Not even wearing gloves.
Yeah. But it's just, it doesn't look good.
No. And the problem with it is that these types of cheap scares, as you called them, or cheap atmosphere settings, they can work when they're just kind of peppered in, but they get to the point where they just start laying them on a little bit thicker and more frequently, where it's like, okay, you've lost the impact of it.
Yeah, I think it would work a lot better for these, because we get a lot of this in the movie. But if you just have that in the background and don't have them acknowledge it, let the audience pick up on it and be like, holy shit.
Yeah, much more effective. Exact same scene where like the floorboards above kind of shake a little bit and there's the fluttering, because I'm assuming this is one of those winged creatures that's maybe keeping an eye on them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a little bit further off and they don't actually hear it. So we get one of these like beautiful outdoor shots from a little bit further away to let the audience feel that atmosphere, but the girls are a little bit more kind of oblivious to it. I think it would have a stronger impact overall, because as an audience, you're then like, oh no, they don't know what's going on. We need to get communication to them.
Exactly. Having the protagonists acknowledge every single thing going on around them, except for that one phone ringing in the store, robs the movie of amazing suspense. So you have the alarm goes off on the Blodgett brand oven and they open it up and find some pies. You're fine. And you brought up a really good point here, because a few seconds later, blood starts dripping onto the pies and the heads of the two bakery owners fall onto the pies from where?
I have no idea.
Like, look at this scenario. The pies, which look like pumpkin pies, one of my favorites, look done. They look baked. The heads that fall out are just severed heads. There is no sign of any heat interacting with them. So whatever happened to them, which makes absolutely no sense when you go back and rewatch this movie, their heads were removed from their bodies and somehow placed precariously enough up inside the oven so that when the door was brought down, they would dislodge and fall onto the pie. That's, I don't know how that's possible.
That's too much. especially when you see the like types of kills we get from these creatures during the course of the movie. They're not doing anything to set up an elaborate reveal. They just kill things.
Yeah, and I'm going to say right now, I don't even know what this fucking thing is, what this big bad is, because it seems like we get a weird mix of the black goo from X-Files, and then we get some of the raptors from Pitch Black, and then weird zombie creatures, and none of it makes sense to me.
No, not at all.
So they run into the kitchen when the phone rings and they pick it up, only hear faint sounds of feedback and voices in the distance.
Another very Silent Hill-esque feeling to me.
Yes, agreed.
Because that whole mechanic of Silent Hill, if people haven't played the game, is that you carry a radio with you because the static, once it kicks in, lets you know that one of the enemies is near. And when they pick up the phone, they hear these similar kinds of tones, but with a little bit of whispering over top of it. And I think it's a phenomenal idea. But in this situation, it's like, all right, so this thing's calling you, trying to communicate, I guess.
And why them? Why communicate with them? Because they do a much better job of getting the point across with lipstick and a mirror later on. So, like, on a rewatch, this monster, this evil entity, this mass, seems desperate as fuck to try and get them to get this flight guy.
Yeah.
So they continue down the hall, and this is one trope we get that I hate, and that is seeing shadows move, or like silhouettes move in front of the camera and behind the characters. It's just a cheap scare tactic. And of course they scream when we get the reveal of Sheriff Bryce Hammond, played by Ben Affleck, and Deputy Stu, played by Liev Schreiber. Immediate thoughts on Bryce and Stu.
Surprised Stu didn't get shot with a shotgun as he just reaches from behind and grabs it. These women are on edge. Don't just grab it.
Yeah. Yeah, I Affleck seems way too young for this character. Schreiber is perfectly creepy. I forgot to mention we have Deputy Steve Shanning, played by Nicky Catt, who's just kind of standing there. I love these three actors. I really do. They do not work well together. The next shot of Stu from the vantage point in the oven, you have it just kind of awkward. He's kind of awkwardly staring into it until Sheriff Bryce calls him out of there. I mean, you can tell by looking at him that he's slightly off. I don't know if we really need the scene of him just staring at the heads on the pies.
Yeah, I don't get what they're trying to do here. Is it some sort of foreshadowing? Is it setting up a personality trait of his that he's quirky? I don't get this.
Well, the thing is, we don't really get any backstory for Stu. So are we seeing his character evolve as we go through the film, or is this how he always has been? They don't give us enough about the characters to really care.
No.
Outside of Lisa and Jenny, and even then, we're given a little bit of backstory, but there's no reason for us to really care about anyone in this movie.
No, like, just have Ben Affleck say something like, you know, he was normal earlier today. I don't know what is going on with him. Something. Or he's just a recent transfer who came in this week or something. Like, just do something to make the audience have at least an inkling as to why this guy is so weird. Instead, it's just, yeah, he's just staring at some heads in an oven, grinning like an idiot.
Yeah. And even Affleck later in the movie is like, what's up with you? You're like, oh, okay, so this is different. What's normal? Like, you're acknowledging that he's acting strange. We've only seen strange. What is normal? Because we need to know, like, is he having an off day? Is he acting completely out of character? We don't know.
Then you never will.
Right? I really want this movie to be good.
Sorry, dude. I don't think you're going to get your wish here.
Oh, you think? Sheriff Bryce wants to bring in forensics, but Jenny urges him to consider that they shouldn't bring in more people due to a possible toxic component. And fucking Stu points out that severed heads in an oven isn't from something toxic.
I can't really argue with that.
Yeah, he is making a great point.
That is a messed up disease that causes your head to fall off and roll into an oven.
Even nowhere to go with that. But yeah, lights flicker. Everyone gets a little bit tense. And Stu, fucking weird Stu, is just staring at Lisa.
I mean, I can't blame him for that.
Yeah, I mean, Rose McGowan, I get you.
She's so pretty. I'd probably stare at her too. And chances of me not coming off as awkward if I ever saw her is probably very low as well.
Yeah, you'd definitely be. You'd be Deputy Stu.
Although I wouldn't just stare into an oven to set the mood or anything like that of severed heads. Yeah.
The group heads back to the police station and give us a little bit more of a backstory about Bryce and being former FBI. I don't like his backstory at all. I really don't. But also Officer Paul, one of the dead police officers, not making mistakes, interrupted by that whistling sound that comes up a couple of times and it resonates through the whole town.
I hated this.
Why?
It is not a pleasant sound to hear. Maybe it was just the mixing of the version I watched, but it was painful to hear. And I'm like, you could have made this a little bit less nails on a chalkboard and I would have gotten the impression. But it was just awful, awful audio.
I actually really enjoyed it. I found it so incredibly unsettling that it really worked for me. I could have done without the flickering lights, though. The siren, always down for a siren in an abandoned town. Again, it just works so well.
Well, you know, look up the original Silent Hill game. Tell me when you hear a siren.
Exactly. What do you think about the audio that we keep getting throughout, like on the radio, through the phone lines? Does it work for you? Because I feel like it's so overplayed.
It works for me in and of itself. But its frequent use is a problem, and its lack of direction is a problem.
Yes.
But just the idea of, like, picking up the phone in this dead city and hearing this kind of feedback with, like, the almost, like, cult-like demonic whispering under it is very, very good atmosphere setting.
Okay. What do you think about the rapid cuts? Because the sound, like, you hate the sound. I'm okay with it. It is jarring, though. It is unsettling. You don't need anything paired with it. So rapid camera cuts spinning around the characters, I don't need those visuals. It's jarring enough already, and it really made me hate the scene, which it could have avoided so easily.
Yeah.
So the lights go off, except some at the end of the street that Jenny says are from the Candle Glow Inn. You have written here that it's very Resident Evil, like how it guides people in a specific direction.
Not even just Resident Evil, any video game, or like even think old cartoons where the color print of something that is interactable is off from the rest of it. It's like, you're clearly holding my hand in a direction.
Yeah, it works much better in a video game than it does in this film. It feels like this movie, I think, like an hour and 38 or an hour 40 something minutes. There's a lot of padding here that we don't need.
Correct.
Kind of like Stu just walking towards the light, forcing the group to follow. Why not just hold him back? The smart thing of checking out the rooms when they're at the inn, I enjoy it. But I mean, they at least say they don't hear anything. Like, there's no animal sounds, nothing like that. Surprising for a mountain town. The music that we get a lot in this movie, I do enjoy. I Fall to Pieces, performed by Patsy Cline. One of the songs I grew up on, my parents being very, very big old country fans. So that took me back. And I thought that old country music is probably the best choice for audio in a movie like this. But Bryce and Stu go to investigate the room. Bryce kicks open the closet and has a flash vision of a kid holding a gun at him. I said I don't like Bryce's backstory. What do you think about it?
It's garbage. His backstory is absolutely garbage. Starting with the initial idea that you brought up is that this guy seems way too young to be former FBI and now the sheriff here. And having this kid in the closet is supposed to be some sort of like traumatic anchor for the sheriff's past. But what does it matter? Does it tell us that this creature, this entity, this ancient enemy or whatever the hell it is, can read your mind and project your biggest fears? Because that never comes up.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up too. Like, they mentioned how it will like absorb memories when it absorbs the people. But Bryce is just standing there. So is this just a thing for him? How does the entity, this mass, know what fucks up his mind? It's so fucking weak, man. It makes no sense to me whatsoever. And we jump from that to Stu in another room in the inn with the corpse of that woman. And he's way too invested in it.
What is he going to do?
If he's not stopped by Bryce, I don't know. But it could go weird.
He takes his glove off. He goes to touch her. What is this character?
We know he's weird already. Is he the villain? Like a sub-boss of sorts, if we want to talk video game terminology? But he's just unlikable.
See, I feel like at this point, he's already one of the villains, or like a representative. What do they call them? Drones?
Drones, yeah.
And in that case, you could almost wave this off as like curiosity, as in the creatures learning about humanity, etc. But then the scene that happens later in the police department when he gets killed by the winged creature makes even less sense.
Yeah. This is janky screenwriting. That's what this is now. But
maybe it was edited in the wrong order.
Well, also, Dean Koontz is an author of books, not screenplays. So maybe that's it. We did skip a brief part where Bryce tries to open a bathroom door, but it's locked and has to kick it in. He calls Jenny in and tells her about having to break the door open and how there was no one inside. But how is it possible when there's no windows in the bathroom to escape the room?
Yeah, because somebody would have had to lock it from the inside, but then there's no way they could have gotten out.
The thing is, they don't. They don't, and that pissed me off, is because the bathroom door locks with a key in the old-timey like key lock that you get to from both sides. So you could easily lock the door from outside and leave. Like, what are we doing, movie? I get where you're going, but the set design ruins your theory.
Nope. You're asking too many questions. Stop.
All right, fine. On the mirror in the bathroom, written in lipstick, says, "Timothy Flight, the ancient enemy." I like how they realize they can't find the lipstick, but at the same time, they could have just taken it with them.
No, because they couldn't get out of the room. Are you even paying attention?
Yeah, I guess fuck me. Fuck me for this entire movie from here on, because it's so fucking infuriating.
At least they can't go any worse from here.
Oh yeah, you're right. It gets a lot better. So they think that the name Flight could be the person that everyone ran from, or was the person that killed everyone else. And in the hallway, the two deputies hear some sounds from one of the rooms and find like a large pile of metallic and plastic items, gold teeth, watches, buttons. One even brings up that there's a pacemaker. I'm okay with this because it does add a bit of mystery to a bland film. A decent bit of mystery, actually.
I'm not okay with it.
Okay, do tell.
I'm fine with the idea of there being a collection of undigestibles, but I'm not okay with them just being dumped there with the sound in the middle of their investigation. Like, open one of the doors and find it. who's dropping it there? How did they get in and out to leave this stuff? Why wouldn't they have then attacked these people? There's no reason in the world to have this happen now.
Exactly. Upon a second viewing, if the entire time this ancient enemy wants Timothy Flight, a guy who works for basically Weekly World News, I think that's actually what it's called, but like we're talking about a newspaper like The Inquirer or something that talks about Batboy being found in the caves. If the ancient enemy wants a hack journalist to expose its existence to the world, take a physical form, threaten the people that it's haunting, and be like, look, bring this guy here and get him to write about us and tell the world about us. Movie's over. Because that's all it wants. All it wants is the world to know about it. So why create a fucking mystery? You want to be known. You want the world to know of your existence? Stop hiding. Just stop fucking hiding. And the world's gonna know.
Well, see, they give you a very good explanation as to why it's in hiding when they do exactly.
Right?
There's no reason to any of this.
At this point in the movie, we're fucked.
And why does this thing even want the world to know about it?
I don't know. I don't know, because they even mentioned later in the movie that it acts kind of like a whale. You know how it comes up and feeds off of a plankton and then goes back deeper into the water? I like that. I like that idea. Also, if a group of fucking nobodies in small town Colorado can kill this thing, your plan's not going to work when you want to expose yourself to the world, because guess what? World's going to kill you.
Sorry, man. I think you're wrong. This is the perfect plan. It doesn't need the element of surprise if all of it's going to do is reveal itself, defeat, and then go back into hiding. That would be stupid.
And it just, if it fucking absorbs all of the memories and knowledge of the people and animals it consumes, shouldn't it be getting smarter?
No. Oh, it is getting smarter. See, what you don't realize is that before this part that we have started to partake in, it's completely unintelligent.
This movie makes no fucking sense.
No, none whatsoever.
I do love how you refer to Stu as Deputy Chuckles.
Well, he just keeps laughing and chuckling at the stupidest things.
Yeah, well, in front of this table, and the rest of the group try and figure out what to do next, and then just kind of shift aside and then reveal a hand with the lipstick tube that had written on the mirror. And the same music plays from before. Why are there still bodies around if it digests everything else?
Or body parts.
Yeah.
Why in the world would you, as a movie maker, put in this very blatant, I'm going to say red herring because of what happens soon, of making you think that he's already a villain? If that's not, I don't get what they're doing from a storytelling standpoint here at all.
Is this another episode where we're just going to be saying, I don't know, a lot of the time?
Yes, sir.
Cool. I don't know. I don't know what we're doing then. I do love the constant use of Patsy Cline, but like you hit the screen from outside, which lures Deputy Steve out, and he's just taken off by one of these creatures, which we haven't seen yet. So, okay, that's a new thing. We're doing that now. Also,
I'm actually okay with this moment because they're still keeping them hidden. The sound of the fluttering obviously leads us to what we believe based on the fluttering above the wooden tiles. But his just running outside blind did not sit well with me. For people who are supposed to be at least somewhat cautious.
Yeah, I don't know. I wish Nikki Cat was around longer. I do find it kind of funny. Wait, when did Pitch Black come out? 99? 2000?
I don't know.
I find it funny that he had purple eyes and was taken away by one of the monsters that looked like it was from Pitch Black. But you have in your notes here in a very Silent Hill moment. And I agree, the radio feedback plays the same type of static and distant voices that Jenny heard on the phone in the bakery. We don't need it anymore. It's been done to death already. So Stu gives Bryce attitude and seems to have developed a bit of a twitch or a tick, you have written. And I didn't notice that the first time through. But yeah, he has started doing this. And as much as I hate the Stu character, Shriver's doing a great job.
Oh, yeah. I feel like he's doing a wonderful job at a character that has no direction from a storytelling standpoint.
Yeah. He is doing the best he can to make this character make sense. Unfortunately, there's not enough there. So, do you find it weird on the topic of Stu how he keeps talking about how cute the girls are?
Not any more so than everything else that he does that's weird.
I guess, yeah.
Like, at this point, it's relative. What's weird for this character? And we have no backstory for him whatsoever. What's weird for him at all?
How is he on the police force is all I'm asking. Bryce freaks out, grabs him by the neck, and Stu points out that the girls are watching this now, so Bryce immediately stops. And the phone rings immediately, answering itself. For more of the fucking static. It's a neat effect. I get it. But can we agree that the buildup of the movie to this point is much better than the payoff we get?
You don't need to say it at this point. The buildup to the movie is better than the rest of the movie.
Agreed. The lights go out and the survivors hear the same fluttering outside, darting around quickly. Until we get to see one of those winged creatures again from the window. And they absolutely unload everything they have, all the bullets, just murdering the shit out of the window, even though the creature hasn't been visible since it flew by the first time.
Yeah, what are you shooting at this point?
I don't know. They even stop briefly, and you can't hear anything. And then Stu starts shooting the shotgun. We're like, well, there's nothing fucking there, man. Like, what are you doing?
So many of Stu's actions could be justified if he was already a villain. Because at this point, he's just potentially egging them on to, like, deplete their ammo reserves.
Yeah. And him being converted already would make sense, but we know that fucking the bullets really do nothing. But he gets fucked up pretty bad after this. Grabbed by the face by one of these creatures, lifted off the ground, eats his face. Brain, eyes. Honestly, it looks like a flying face hugger from Alien. They didn't fly, but give that thing wings, and that's what we get. It's a really cool creature design. You have written here that Lisa kind of shaking and motioning towards her neck in a moment. It doesn't come back up in the story at all. I noticed that too, but I don't know what she was doing.
Yeah. You could almost think that, oh, if Stu was slowly being, like, his brain twisted by this thing, and that's why he was starting to laugh and starting to have a twitch, that, oh, maybe now Lisa's getting infected or something. But no, they're just weird gestures that they decided in editing to keep in there for no reason at all.
Can we agree that the practical effects here are actually quite good? Mm. Like, Stu's skeletal face?
It's okay.
I think it looks great. It's like super wet and gross. When they start talking about demons and the devil and shit, it doesn't fit in this movie for me. And Lisa says that the events of the night are the doing of the devil, and they're alive because people like because it wanted people like Stu first. Enough of that shit. Get that out of this movie. It's already bad. I don't need this. And it just cuts to what I think is San Francisco. FBI agents in suits in a car and raincoats pull up to Worldwide News and question the writer Timothy Flight, played by Peter O'Toole. Again, how did they land this amazing actor? But they question him about articles he wrote on the ancient enemy and mass disappearances. I'm cool with that. I love that stuff. They tell him that they need him to go with them, but he declines, And then they drop, it's a matter of national security.
Is it?
That's my question. Is it? How do they know what's going on?
They, for what we're led to believe, have vague communication from when Bryce tried to use the radio earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Very few of those details were revealed. I think maybe he did get the name out there, but they got a very broken up communication from the radio. That seems like a jump to be like, this is national security.
I highly doubt they would act on it so quickly. We do get one really smart move in this movie, though. We cut back to Colorado in the police station. Bryce and Jenny have a heart-to-heart, start to bond over the situations and backgrounds. But it's sleeping in the jail cells, by far the smartest move anybody has made in this movie. Because you don't know what you're up against. You know there are creatures. You don't know if there's like a serial killer or like people out there murdering others. You have the keys. You can unlock the cell from the inside. Safest place to be. I think that's brilliant. And then they fucking slap us with more of Bryce's background. The newspaper clipping about the boy. Who fucking cares? We're not here for his backstory. We don't care. It doesn't need to be in the movie.
No. It should only be there if it serves a purpose to the story or an actual vital part of his personality.
Exactly. Nope. Here we really start to see them focus on the idea that whatever this thing is, it travels through the plumbing. I don't like it.
Does it, though?
Right? Does it?
That is the focus that they go with a lot of these shots. But is it actually traveling through the plumbing?
I mean, apparently it's underground and is in the sewers, so maybe that's just how we're supposed to hear it. But it seems
there
to travel
is a scene
out
later on in the movie where it just literally seeps through the ground.
I know. It doesn't make sense. But like, we get the scene of it in the sink, in the room with the body bags. Lisa has to go to the bathroom, needs an escort, drops a cigarette near the drain of the sink, and we hear the sounds again. The one thing that saved the scene for me was the toilet flushing behind her. I like that. It's not a jump scare so much, but it does build more suspense. And I have to give the movie credit. It does suspense very well, but it does suspense with no payoff, which
well,
is
that's the problem.
Frustrating. It's so
some of these setups are phenomenal. They don't go anywhere.
Exactly. And that's a huge problem. If this movie had some payoff for the setups that it presented us, it would be so much better. But it's just constant disappointment after disappointment. So Lisa opens the stall to find the cliche nothing. Then we get a bit of a jump scare with Stu, you know, blackened eyes appearing behind her, but how his face is gone. Of course, he's calling her cute and being weird. And when she runs out and Bryce runs in to investigate, there's nothing there. So they head into the room with the body bags. Bags are empty. Lack of exits, inability to evaporate. They don't know what's going on. So they run outside when they hear the sound of a helicopter, and it just passes overhead because it's assumedly on a reconnaissance run. This 100% to me is a zombie movie trope. And now I'm really feeling like this movie is a muddled mess.
Yeah, it doesn't know what it is.
Yeah. Even the, you have here, the pointless traveling scene with the FBI agents mocking flight. Why is this here? We know he writes for one of the most ridiculous papers in the world that's all about conspiracy theories. We know he's not held highly. We don't need a mocking scene.
No. And it's just pointless fluff. As we discussed, this movie, it feels longer than it is, but it's not a short movie.
It's not. But it seems like the next one that comes up, where Bryce has the idea of the girls leaving in his truck, but oh my god, it doesn't work. Yeah, because we've already seen that. This isn't new. Like, two lines I've been using a lot lately. What are we doing here? And I don't know. those two lines sum up this movie.
Yeah, and the second one answers the first.
Yeah, it really does. They don't fall for that screaming victim trick. Lisa noting that it's probably just trying to lure them out. A good thing here, though, is that I like how it can't perfectly imitate human voices. And you can hear some of that distortion in the scream. And I think that's what Lisa picked up on. Like, there is some good to this movie, just not enough. And then we just cut back to Flight traveling in a car advising soldiers that normal weaponry is ineffective, even though he has no fucking reason to believe this.
And he has very few details right now.
What details? If exactly any, does he have?
The only communication he's had is with these FBI agents that have come to retrieve him. And the only information they have is some jumbled, distorted radio communications that came in partially from Bryce. So how are they able to even remotely give him enough information to even deduce from?
Yeah. And he's like talking about Mayan disappearances and Roanoke. And we're like, okay.
I don't need any of this in the movie.
No. Although I do love the story of Roanoke a lot. It's very interesting. But he's introduced to the field lab, which you have written here is pretty much a bomb shelter on wheels. And that's exactly what it looks like. And we're given a barrage of scientists who obviously are just victims. Just fodder.
Just more fodder.
But does the movie need more fodder? Or would you have preferred it stayed to the sisters and the police? I prefer sisters and police.
I don't think it matters.
I know. I think the story would work much better with a smaller scale cast. I don't think we need all of death because we've already been told it's wiped out a town of 400 people. That's enough for me. What do you think about the scene between Jenny and Bryce and the candy bar wrapper?
It's so lame. It is so lame.
Lucky's on your side, though, Sandro.
Really? I get it. You know, try to ease the tension a little bit. But yeah. First of all, is there a candy bar that just gives you messages inside of it?
Not that I know of, no. No. I mean, that'd be nice, but...
Okay, so what are we doing here?
Well, the field lab shows up. And we get shots of the soldiers and scientists exploring the town and investigating bodies, like the trope of any movie, like The Crazies, which it does this whole thing much better. I'm so angry at this film.
You got this, man. You can do it.
The survivors meet Flight. Like, I think the movie would have been much better without anything high tech being introduced. There's the two soldiers opening the sewers and discussing that there's a junction box down below and they need to power up the lab. And you brought up a great point here. The lab's already fucking powered. So remove this scene altogether.
Yeah, I don't understand what. Maybe if it needs further power, but it seems like it's already doing what it's supposed to do.
That's because it is.
And if I'm not mistaken, these two soldiers are unsuccessful in getting the lab, quote unquote, powered up.
Yeah.
Lab doesn't seem to be short on power at any point in the rest of the movie.
No, I don't know. I fucking don't know. I don't even know why we go to the church, where we're presented a dead priest and more undigested remains.
See, now, the undigested remains in this scene work fine for me because it's almost like, okay, we have to have, like, just a dumping point for these remains. Okay. They weren't just, like, dropped there with a sound and a jump scare, right? Yeah. Fine. You know, I can accept the fact that maybe these demons have a demon bathroom for the shit they can't digest. Fine.
But it's... Okay. The problem I have with this, you could only get on a secondary viewing. And it's dropped at the bottom of a statue. And everyone's like, maybe it's an offering or a statement, a religious statement, to put this at the bottom of the statue. And Flight's like, no, those are undigested remains. And then we learn later that the thing is convinced it's a demon because of the people it consumed, thinking it was a demon while it was consuming them. So yes, it was a point. It was trying to make a point. And the character tells us to negate it before we're even presented with the idea that maybe that's the case. And then the fact that it is the case. So our specialist doesn't even know what's going on.
I don't see a problem here. I don't know what you're confused by.
Okay. In the mechanic shop, the new arrivals are met with their first supernatural occurrence as they hear a child singing coming from the drain in the sink. I think the biggest problem with this movie is that it doesn't give you anything to think about. The mystery is so horribly convoluted at this point that all you can do is sit back and just hope that it all makes sense in the end. But spoiler alert, it fucking doesn't. It's just one giant mess.
Now, hold on. Maybe we can still decipher it.
Oh, yeah? Go for it.
Well, once we get to the end, obviously not now. I don't have all the pieces to the puzzle.
Oh, okay. Well, let's get on that.
Perhaps this, disembodied voice in the drain that the scientist thinks, what, he can open the drain and find an entire kid?
Who the fuck rams their hand down a closed drain? There's singing down there. I'm just going to put my hand in it.
Yeah.
And your hand's too big to fit in, so I'm just going to cram my fingers in about 3 inches and see what that does.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sandro, again, what are we doing?
I don't know!
So he gets splashed in the face with this black sludge. Okay.
I love this moment of, like, panic followed by, oh, it's okay, it's just black sludge.
I'm not cool with that.
You should question that in and of itself.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just that black sludge that randomly shoots out of drains.
Just exploded out of a drain where I heard a kid singing. That's fine. We're back to square one.
What were we thinking?
So they enter a room that's covered in posters and drawings of Satan and a variety of demons, I guess. There's a body on the bed that comes to life and shuts the door, beginning what you have here written as the implied slaughter of all the nameless characters. I don't think it's really implied. I think we're just shown strap. We don't need a higher body count in this movie. It takes away from the creepiness that we were promised in the first 20 minutes.
Maybe this is the room that the creature got all of its ideas for it being a demon.
You know what? Sure, let's go with that. That would make even more sense. The soldier in the sewer hears noises, sees flashing lights, but insists on heading towards it instead of getting the fuck out of there.
Yeah, what are you doing?
Fires off shots. Guess what? He doesn't make it.
No. I thought when he ran back very, very late and finally got on his hands on that ladder, I'm like, maybe he's going to make it. Oh.
A
moment of suspense like that doesn't work if you know he ain't gonna make it.
I added a note to yours here. It just says, fine, guys. I guess we're in full sprint toward the ending now.
Yes!
We cut back to the church, where a dog approaches. No one but Flight seems to think that this isn't weird. How is everyone so fucking stupid in this movie?
And they're not even like they're just normal people. These are supposed to be scientists. You're supposed to believe they have some level of intelligence. Yeah, a dog. No problem. Pet this dog. Seems all right.
This dog is bursting open with tentacles. Okay.
The thing did it better.
Much better. So the scientists are basically possessed at this point.
Why?
I don't know.
It didn't possess people prior. It killed them. Why is it now possessing people?
Why is it allowing them to have direct contact, verbal contact, with one of the main characters?
No, I ask the questions here.
Why does Flight have to write their, quote, gospel? I don't know. He just goes back to the main cast, warns them, and then this thing just seeps through the ground to possess General Copperfield. And like you brought up, drains, apparently plumbing, doesn't matter after all.
No!
And just bursts through the ground.
What are we doing here?
I mean, we're seeing a cool effect, that helmet filling with ooze. I mean, that looks great. But Copperfield falls, smashing his face on the ground and breaking the glass of his helmet. And what I think is a pretty cool shot, pulls that giant shard of glass out of his mouth. Which is practical effects, because you see like the mouth expand around it much larger than an actual mouse can. And then he just spits on it and this ooze that he spits out turns into a gecko that the group is now meant to study to write this gospel, but then it warns them not to leave, and then he just falls over and melts into goo.
Why do they need to study it to tell the world about it?
How are they not allowed to leave if they need to tell everyone? The radios don't work, obviously, anymore. The phones don't work anymore. We need you to spread the word, but stay here and don't talk to anyone. Again, what the fuck are we doing, guys? It seems like everyone gets it except for Bryce.
Bryce is the stupidest FBI sheriff ever.
Yeah. Why are we still alive?
I just told you, man.
You just got told. You need to write the gospel. You need to spread the word. That's why you're still alive.
But why male models?
How does Flight learn so much about this thing? Especially it being the oldest entity on Earth and that it functions like flatworms. Is he a specialist in flatworms?
I don't know. What criteria is he using to determine its age?
I don't know. And I was listening to what he was saying about the flatworms. I found it disturbingly interesting. Training flatworms to learn a maze. It's not really learning a maze. It's like turning left or right at a Y. And grinding those worms up and feeding them to another batch of worms. And those worms solved the maze on the first try. It didn't work out that way. If you look into the actual study, it was not really that successful. So we get another vocal reminder from the entity that the group needs to tell its story. Yeah, we fucking get it. We know. Spread the gospel.
Quit nagging me!
Right? We're not even allowed to go anywhere. What are we going to do? Bryce asks if they will be allowed to live if they complete the task. You can't complete the task because even if you write it, what's it going to do? Just go around and like deliver it to the government?
I love how it doesn't respond.
No, well, it responds by shaking the mobile unit. And Bryce has had enough, determines its weakness must be its ego, just like Satan, because sure, why the fuck not? It, like we said before, it consumed people that thought it was a demon, so now it believes itself to be one. For fuck's sake, man, this ancient enemy is dumb as fuck.
I would argue that there aren't really any intelligent characters in this movie at all.
Well, now we know that the monster, the main bad of the movie, is just a fucking idiot. And the protagonists are idiots. Why should we care at this point? You have written here, and this sums this up perfectly for me, the way you worded this. Flight does more science typing and surmises that the things that they are seeing are drones, brackets phantoms, and that the mother mass should or would be massive. He claims this is logical deduction. Of what? Exactly. How? Why? I don't know. The threatening shaking continues in order to keep the survivors on task. When a case of biological samples opens and Bryce gets hurt closing it, Jenny treats him. I don't care.
Yeah, it's just a series of events that serve no purpose other than maybe to make you think, oh, look, they have all these biological samples. So later, when the doctor conveniently needs bacteria, oh, there it is, because we saw it 1 minute ago.
You brought up a really good point here, some movie trivia, which I missed completely. The arm patch on Bryce, Santa Mira County Sheriff, name of a fictional California town that appears in dozens of movies like Halloween 3, E.T., Body Snatchers. I wanted to bring up that Joe Chappelle, who directed this movie, also did Halloween 6, The Curse of Michael Myers, which is almost universally hated, except for me. Also, a very young Paul Rudd. I highly recommend checking it out.
So, he looked the exact same as he does now?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's a vampire.
Yeah, he doesn't age.
Lisa asks Jenny if she thinks the people it's taken over are all still trapped inside their bodies, like in their own hell. And Jenny says, it's not that way, and walks away.
Again! suck as an older sister!
Also, she has no reason to believe anything she says. And after she walks away, My heart's broken because Lisa just mutters to herself, I don't want to go to hell. This poor fucking woman, man. And like the delivery is great. Rose McGowan hits it out of the park, but the character is pointless. They're all pointless. Everything about this movie is pointless.
Rose McGowan has the perfect performance in this movie to allow you to say that it's wasted on this movie.
Yes. The computer scan scans for matching life forms. Says it shares properties with petroleum jelly and many minerals and chemicals found in the human body. So, luckily, the case of biological samples is intact and it's full of bacteria, one of which Flight grabs, implying it will most likely be a weapon for them. Why? Because.
Because he did the science typing. Aren't you paying attention?
He turns off power because it hears them through the electronics. Okay.
What happened to the drains?
I don't know.
Now it's electronics?
Sure. And tells them that the vial he has is Biosan 14. And I love this part. Lisa asks if it's man-made bacteria, and Flight says, no, it's harmless to humans. So why fucking have it on the truck at all?
Did he even hear the question she asked?
No, she even says she knows it's used to break up oil spills, and Flight shuts her down immediately. Because he's like, this is new. And then confirms what she said to be true. Again, what the fuck are we doing here?
This feels like one of those scenes where they just had like a script of papers that fell on the ground and like, oh, we'll just pick up this one, and this one. I guess this will make sense as a script. Like,
let's get everyone fucking wasted, shuffle the script pages around, and just see what happened. So the military base that's been setting up has been completely wiped out by the drones.
Bryce, why?
I don't know.
Is it just to, like, suggest that the threat is growing and stretching out further? And if it's just going to do that and take over everyone, why does it want its story told? It's just going to take over.
I don't know. Like, well, fucking Affleck. Affleck just, he heads to the other mobile unit and is startled by the fucking dog right behind him. And then he just ignores it and keeps going. So, like, we're constantly presented threats that are entirely inconsistent. So how are we supposed to care about anything at this point? The fucking Copperfield drone, man. The Copperfield drone just pops up in the unit after Bryce is in there and just watches him do his shit.
Yep.
That's it. He watches him get the gun and the vial he needs to kill it and doesn't do anything. There's an audio misdirect. And then Bryce just walks back with the gun, briefly telling the dog that they're going to tell the world. How, we still don't know. Flight asks how they plan to bring the mask to them. And without them saying a word, he realizes he is going to be the bait. Probably the worst person to use for bait, but okay.
Why did any of what you just described happen?
I don't know.
Could the delivery system weapon that they have not just have been on the lab that they were already on, and you saved all of us a few minutes of our time by not doing any of this?
The setup, I kind of get. It's like, we need to come up with a secretive plan so it doesn't know what we're doing and we can find a way to kill it. So when they use Flight as bait, he goes outside and just straight up tells them, or tells the mask, what the plan is to kill it. So not only does what we just saw not make sense, or is it necessary? The character fucking negates everything they've done immediately after we've watched it. So you're right, it didn't need to happen, but it did. And then we're told it didn't need to happen. But we already fucking know that. And then the entire town of drones just shows up in front of Flight. I have to say, though, probably the best shot of the movie. Then the mask reveals itself as a swirling black tornado, and the other survivors pop out of the mobile lab and shoot at it in what is by far the worst shot of the movie. So we get the best and worst in about 10 seconds.
Yeah. That, you know what? That sounds about right for this movie.
They're separated as Flight jumps out of the way of a flying car, because sure, it's a twister moment. Bryce tells the girls to run, so they head to the police station, arm themselves, while he heads down to the open sewer. Power's out in the police station now. Girls are chased by the Stew drone before they unload their shotguns into him. And you have the top half of the Stew drone spreads tentacle legs and continues to chase them while making, quote, stupid comments and jokes. I think he's great in this scene. It's obviously not Stew, but a derivative version of Stew. And I think
it's really like well. Some of his personality was retained even in its drone form, but
yeah, like watered down though.
But at the same time, we don't have any reason to believe that personality or memories are or aren't retained, or like there's no consistency to what this thing is, what it does, and how it impacts people.
No, it doesn't make sense.
Not whatsoever.
So the girls climb into the attic and are again confronted by "you have terrible effects, Stu," until they shoot him with a shotgun shell and then the exposed parts that follow with some of the bacteria. How are these effects terrible? I think they look great.
Okay, well, we'll have to agree to disagree on this one.
Because I thought the tentacles were great practicals, filmed in reverse, obviously, because they're like whipping out and latching onto things and winding around them. I thought the shotgun to the face is fantastic. When we see it twice, I think it looks great. What about it caught you off guard, or what about it didn't you like?
I think maybe the blending between the human half of Stu doesn't fit well with the actual effects. I don't think they blended it properly.
I will agree with you there for sure. But again, 1998, I'm going to let that go. The effects here are much better than the faculty, if you ask me. So in the sewers, Bryce is confronted by the fucking gun kid drone and is tossed around.
Well, again, why is it taking on the form of this kid? Did it even... What did it absorb that it knows this kid's existence?
I don't know. There's no reason to believe the kid has any part of the story whatsoever, other than it's Bryce's like mental trauma, PTSD. I don't know how the mask knows about it. It comes up repeatedly throughout the movie with no explanation whatsoever. I hate that it picks up a vial of the bacteria and references Bryce shooting the boy, to which he replies, "he's gonna miss," and shoots the vial. Like, I hate his sob story about killing this kid. He's not a deep character. Stop trying to make us care. And I agree with you. You have written the small amount of splash, or the small splash of bacteria seems to be enough to finish off the ancient enemy, because apparently the boy was the last bit of the mass. My note after that is, the fuck? Then what's going on with Stu? What are we doing here? Like, Flight tells the other survivors that in a way it won because he will still tell the world of his existence. And I just have to ask, why? There's no need. It's dead. No one takes you seriously whatsoever. So, like, you say fame. He's already a hack. No one believes him.
Yeah. He's going to come off as a little bit more insane now.
Yeah. You're going to ruin your career even more. Because the government's going to cover up everything. And we cut to Flight on a TV telling the story. And patrons in a bar watching this question the validity of it, until they hear the laugh of Deputy Stu, and he asks if they want to see something. What? What? What is this?
I hate this ending.
Cut to the credits, and Patsy Cline.
So, was Stu a drone that was sent in advance the entire time? I'd be more okay with it if that was the case, but that is not what we got here.
We don't get anything here.
I hate this ending. I hate it. I hate it so much.
The information given to us throughout the film is negated by the film itself.
Remember how good the setup to this movie was?
This movie should be just a 15-minute opener, and then it should stop. It should just be a short film with a cliffhanger ending. It'd be great. It'd be fucking great if it was just the two sisters showing up, trying to figure out what's going on. Then we get the jump scare without the reveal of Bryce and Stu and Steve. Like, that would be great. I'd be okay with that. Instead, we're given an amazing intro that's just ruined by another hour and 10 minutes of film. You want to get into numbers?
I mean, sure, but you already told me you don't even have a budget.
I have no idea. You want to guess the box office?
$50?
$5.6 million.
Okay.
5.6.
Okay.
That is horrid. That is,
it is horrid,
terrible.
But the thing that comes to my mind is appropriate.
Yeah. You want to guess the IMDb rating?
3.8.
5.4.
No.
Yeah, man.
No, you're messing with me.
No, no, it's actually 5.4. I think you'll be happier with Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay.
Percentage of positive reviews for the critics for the tomato meter.
31.
13.
You know what? I'm glad I got those numbers mixed up.
Audience score?
7.
27.
That's too high.
What happened?
I don't know. It had such a good start.
It was such a strong build. And then we got the rest. I don't know. I guess let's just get into awards here, man, because I'm very curious.
Okay. So who did you have for your least favorite character?
Bryce.
Okay.
Ben Affleck. I found his backstory painful. I found his acting incredibly weak. I didn't like anything he did in the movie, and I don't think he needs to be in it. I don't think that character needs to exist in this story. You?
It pains me to say it, but it's Liev Schreiber as Stu. I think he's phenomenal. I think his performance is very good. But this character has so many flaws. there are so many problematic portions of his backstory. I still don't know what level of villainy he had prior to like the tentacle stew, but it's gotta be some. It's bad. Like, it has nothing to do with the performance. It is entirely that this character is one of the most broken characters I've seen in a movie in a long time.
Yeah.
And that's why it pains me to say, because he is good.
He's a great actor in everything he does.
He's good in this too. It's just that, like, if you look at the individual scenes that he is in this movie and take them completely out of context, he does a great job. If you were later told that he was the ancient evil and the whole time he was manipulating the people, you know, leading them to the hotel and causing them to do things that he wanted to do and partially still learning about the human race. That's why he was so curious about the body and stuff. You'd be like, man, he nailed it. But then you take that context away from it and you're like, it's a great performance for a character that has no purpose.
So what you're saying is you wanted this movie to have plot.
How dare.
I agree with what you're saying, for sure. He is an absolutely amazing actor. Unfortunately, he did a great job at a role that was so confusing that it just felt awkward.
Mm-hmm.
What about a favorite character?
So almost in the exact same vein, I had Lisa, played by Rose McGowan. Again, phenomenal performance, but a character that was just not... Now, the difference between her and Stu is that they gave us a good origin to this character as opposed to Stu, where we have no idea.
Yeah.
And then they just didn't utilize that information moving forward. But the character in and of itself could have been such a good setup for this badass, like, heroine that would save the day. And they just ruined all of it. Everything they touched in this movie, they ruined.
Yeah, I also chose Lisa, played by Rose McGowan, and that's because they could have taken her in either direction. She could have been this badass, kick-ass heroine character, or she could have been a really broken character, and I think Rose McGowan could have done either very well. Instead, she's just presented to us with a wicked backstory, a tough, badass backstory, and then she's kind of a weaker character throughout the film. So I really enjoyed that juxtaposition, but we don't do anything with her, yet she's the strongest actor, I would say, in the movie. So it's frustrating, but I think she does the best job. I want to have to go into memorable line here, because I said before about the scene where Jenny just says it isn't going to happen that way and walks away, and Lisa just says, I don't want to go to hell. The reason why I say that's my most memorable line is because I have it written in my fucking notes, because I forget everything else anybody ever said in this goddamn movie. It's so forgettable. It is such a mess. I can't remember anything else. Like, I would love to hear what your favorite line is or most memorable line.
So it's actually when they're devising the plan to take out the ancient enemy.
Okay.
And Ben Affleck, Bryce, asks, will it kill it at all? And then Flight responds with, unless there's a small inner core that can tear loosely from the mass and survive on its own. And there's just this defeated delivery by Affleck, which I think is his best line delivery in the entire movie, where he's just like, you know, I really just wanted you to say yes.
I mean, that gives us our ending with Stu, though.
It does, but
I do.
It's still shit.
Yeah. You are correct. I'm not disagreeing with you. That is a good line, though. I did forget about that one. So, unmemorable line, but great line for me.
Wait, because you don't see that as often in these movies when you've got, like, the plan for the hope spot coming in. Yeah. And the person just being like, well, maybe. And like, he's just so defeated. He's like, oh, come on, man.
What do you have for a memorable scene?
It's probably the greatest 5 seconds in this movie. Is there's this gate that opens, this rusty sounding gate. Mm-hmm. And we see two girls' backs walking away from the camera. Mm-hmm. Phenomenal.
Okay. For memorable scene, I have two words. The gate.
Oh! You know what? I'm not surprised we both had that one.
Do you know how fucking depressing that is?
Yes, I do.
It's almost an hour and 40 minutes, and it's like a 5 to 15 second scene with no dialogue, really. That's what we wanted this movie to be, and we never got any more of it.
If I go further into it, I will say that part of its impact is the fact that it was taking place during a number of scenes that were a phenomenal buildup that could have been to a wonderful movie.
Yeah. The first 15 minutes are filled with great scenes and great story. After that, you can just stop.
Okay, so that's the awards. What are your final thoughts on Phantoms?
Nope.
You have to give some final thoughts.
I love Dean Koontz. I do. If anyone were to tell me that they were thinking about watching Phantoms, I would say watch Odd Thomas. The movie starts off incredibly strong and then just falls apart immediately after that. The performances really are pretty good. It's just the characters are fucked up and used horribly. I feel bad because I do love Dean Koontz, and he wrote the screenplay, but like I said, he writes novels, not screenplays, so it is kind of on him. It's also on editing. I think Joe Chappelle as a director did a great job for what he could do. I mean, the movie itself, other than some shoddy effects at the time, it was 1998. What do you expect from CG? The movie looks good. The movie sounds good. It just is a muddled mess. I want to know how much editing went into this in post, because it feels like a lot was left out that would have made everything make a lot more sense. Would I recommend it? No. No, I can't. I can't. Like I said, watch the first 15 minutes, turn it off. But at that point, you're probably just going to continue, and then you get fucking mad at me, so just don't do it. What are your final thoughts?
This is a bad movie. There's really no way to sugarcoat it. I can highlight some of the nicer aspects. Like you said, the direction was pretty good, and the shots, the outdoor shots especially, the atmosphere-setting shots, are done so wonderfully, but there is not nearly enough here to justify actually viewing the duration of the movie.
Yeah.
So if anyone was to ask me, I would just resoundingly say, do not watch this movie.
I hate that we agree on this, because I want people to get out there and actually experience some of Dean Koontz's stories, because they are actually really fucking good. It's just, what we get in film from him is not based off of his best work.
Yeah, I mean, you're saying you want people to experience Dean Koontz. The only thing going through my mind is not like this.
Not like this.
Just not like this.
Never like this.
So those are our very depressing thoughts on Phantoms. If you would like to share your thoughts with us, you can hit us up on social media. We are on Twitter at BSBargainBin, BSBargainBin.com, Facebook.com/BSBargainBin, and of course, YouTube.com/@BSBargainBin. Ben.
Yo.
What's going on next week, buddy?
Next week is going to be a very special episode for us. Do you know why?
It's not Phantoms?
Yes. We finally crossed... okay. No, Phantoms is now done, but this will be our year three finale.
Yes.
3 years, Andrew.
Mm-hmm.
We are still sticking to the year 1998, and we are going to be covering a movie that is disturbingly similar to The Faculty, which I didn't even realize when I picked it, but we will be covering Disturbing Behavior.
Come sit down. This is Kathy.
Hey.
Lorna. Chug. You know Robbie. And Dickie. Steven's new to the Bay from Chicago.
You hate it here, don't you?
It's just different. The kids
are strange.
Hello.
Hey.
It's like they're always smiling. They're always happy.
Kelly Connor said she saw Andy Efkin bite the head off a kitten in a fit of rage.
They're brainwashed, lobotomized, programmed. They used to be my friends.
Gavin thinks some sinister force is taking over the Cradle Bay meatheads.
A sinister force?
Now, with every successive kid, we are getting closer and closer to perfection.
All in favor?
I can't go home. When I get there, they're waiting for me. Don't leave me alone like this!
I'm a friend of Gavin's. Is he around?
Gavin's a good boy now.
Science is God.
It's not what you think.
I got a couple tiny glitches to iron out.
Will you go out with me?
No.
Why not?
Wrong. Bad.
It's not bad, it's normal.
Who's gonna believe you, huh? Your parents?
You signed me up for the program?
Paranoia, paranoia, everybody's coming to get me.
It's a new kind of cool.
Nowhere to run. Nowhere to hide. No one to trust.
We want what's best for you.
What about what I want?
I'm not sick, but I'm not well. And I'm so high, 'cause I'm in
hell. Wow.
Disturbing Behavior.
Until next week, have a good one.
All the best.